Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Tony.
Oh, look who it is.
Tony, remind everyone of who this is.
Oh, this is Big Slick Rick right here. I don't know if you're a longtime listener or not, but I'm pretty sure you recognize that sexy, sultry voice. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, our good friend Harry, had some prior engagements to take care of, and since I'm contractually obligated to do at least 50 shows of a year, I had to come to work, and you graciously stepped in to help me out.
Yeah, man. Like, I was the third man for a couple of years, I think. And then I had to bow out because my family just kept growing and growing and growing. And it was just hard for me to stay up, watch Raw, then do a podcast, then get up early to go to work. But I was listening to the show the other day, and it just brought back these feelings, man. I was like, man, I got to get back on the podcast. I want to talk about Raw.
And you know what? That's what we do. We talk about Raw on this fucking show. So, speaking of Raw, this was the last Raw before SummerSlam, so the assumption would be that it's a pretty big one. We had a nice little surprise at the end. We had a couple of we had a title change. We had Seth Rollins wearing his hat backwards. So. The last time you were on this show, I had a really nice format where we were kind of focused on stuff that was specific, and we highlighted, you know, the biggest events. Well, that went out the window since you've been gone, and now we just basically go from top to bottom, with the exception of, you know, certain segments that bleed into each one another. So with that being said, how about we just start at the top?
Let's do it.
Hell yeah. All right. So we start Raw with a very, very solemn 10-bell salute to, you know, the victims of the shootings that happened over the past, you know, few days. As I'm sure you remember, I don't really get too political on this show, so we'll just kind of gloss over that. But for, you know, we do pay our respects to anybody that was affected by that, either directly or indirectly. It's a really shitty situation. Raw's opening is cut almost immediately, and we get to Joe standing atop an announce table with two guys and a girl, screaming at them, basically mad that he's been accused of hitting Roman Reigns, or attacking Roman Reigns, I'm sorry, last week on SmackDown. Joe comes off incredibly angry, and his interaction with Corey Graves was, you know, just fine. Essentially, what he's saying is that 80% of the universe is retarded, and he coerces them to show the footage of Reigns getting attacked or almost attacked, whatever you may be. Now, what I thought was interesting about this was the little things. One being how it kind of cut the intro short, so they're going for that anything could happen feel on Raw. and two being the interactions with Corey and Cole. I don't know if you noticed this or if you cared, but I personally, I felt like the small interaction with Corey Graves came off incredibly well, and then the interaction with Michael Cole came off incredibly scripted, and I think that's the difference between a performer like Cole and a performer like Graves, because Joe has always been a maniacal man on the microphone, and, you know, this was no different. We could talk about his in-ring promo a little bit later, but as for now, how did you feel that the opening was different enough to shock you? Were you surprised at the way it went?
I mean, I feel like the openings to Raw since Heyman took over this is like his third week now. They've all been 10 times better than what we were getting. I mean, we were just so pre-programmed to just accept these like long, drawn-out 20-minute promos to start the show that just kind of outlines how the show's gonna go from that point forward. But lately, we've started off shows with matches. We started off shows with Joe ranting and raving at the announce desk. I mean, I love. It's a new feeling, and I think these shows are getting a breath of fresh air right now.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. At least with the opening, it's a small thing, but it matters because of the everything that we've seen over the past like years. We're talking years where it's almost always a 20-minute promo. It's almost always somebody, you know, a revolving door where a wrestler comes out and then another one, only to introduce a multi-man match that, you know, we ultimately could have just said was happening. Another question I have for you regarding the opening segment, something that I think it didn't bother me. It was just kind of questionable with Samoa Joe going on and on with his rant and then Becky Lynch's music hits. Now, character-wise, Becky Lynch coming out and, you know, not caring about Samoa Joe, I think that makes sense. But Joe not caring about that, I don't think that made sense. And I know it's such a small thing. It saved them all of, like, 13 seconds. But we read somewhere about them bleeding segments into one another kind of purposefully. Do you think that this was effectively done or that it didn't really matter at all?
Well, this was kind of strange because when Becky Lynch's music hit, it came right after Joe had said he was going to hold Raw hostage unless Roman Reigns came down to apologize him, which I took to mean right now, like this was going to be it. He's holding Raw hostage. But then Becky Lynch's music hits and she has a match, and we don't see Joe again until the third hour where he's finally puts a chair in the ring and says, "I'm holding Raw hostage." That was very strange to me.
Yeah, and we're going to fast forward to that segment too, because the way that I took the opening promo was him saying, "When Reigns gets here, I'm going to hold the show hostage." And then we get to that third hour, like you said, and Joe sits in the ring, and Cole says, "Reigns isn't here, he's on his way," and Joe acts as if Reigns is there. Joe is not a dumb heel. He's not one of those people that comes off as unintelligent. So this segment, although it had the same boasting personality that Joe always has, it really didn't work for me. And this is all before he goes outside. The whole taking over the show thing never worked for me, period, because you have this entity that runs the show that simply wouldn't allow that to happen in reality. So it's not like, you know, no one came out. If someone's going to sit on a chair in the middle of the ring for the entire 3 hours or last hour, there's going to be someone that's going to be upset. So Joe claiming that, you know, if Reigns doesn't come out, he's going to, you know, do something crazy. Ben says he's going to give him to the count of three. Now, you as a parent, I'm pretty sure you've done the whole don't make me go over there, I'm going to count to three thing. I remember as a child, I didn't even know what the number three was, because once mom hit number two, I'm running. So after Joe hits three, he just kind of sits there and says, "All right, well, I'm going to get you." And it just, I don't know, that whole segment didn't work for me up until we got to the backstage area. Now, do you think that this is signs of Samoa Joe being a bad parent?
Yeah, I noticed that too. And if you wouldn't have brought it up, I would have brought it up. Yeah, that. And I mean, I can't criticize Joe. He's just such a great talker. The way he delivers his promos are so intense, and he has a real believability factor with him. But this didn't work at all. Like, he came, puts a chair in the ring, counts to three, and then they tell him, oh, Roman Reigns is here. Okay, well, I'm just going to go meet Roman Reigns in the parking lot. Well, what was the point of coming to the ring in the first place?
Yeah, I thought he was coming to you. Yeah, I think that was just kind of proof of the fact that there's certain performers that can really, really do work magic with what's given to them. But if the writing itself isn't all that great, there's not much that the best performer can do because the cracks are going to show. And I think that was a small example of what we saw tonight. Now, we get to the meat and potatoes of this, you know, fucked up stew, where Samoa Joe goes to the back. And I think this is going to divide the crowd a little bit. And that's why I find it interesting. So he follows, he goes to Reigns where he's, you know, waiting in his car or pulls up in his car. Reigns opens the door. They kind of jaw-jack a little bit, like they're really going to get down and dirty to the fight. And then a car comes in and hits the backside of Roman Reigns' car on the driver's side. Reigns supposedly flies into the car and, you know, is injured. Okay, so a couple of things wrong. Obviously, the camera work is relatively shitty, and the switcheroo is, I mean, pretty obvious. I don't know if they have somebody in the back, but they really need to hire somebody that does better with production value of these attacks and creating fake waiting rooms for OBGYN offices. I mean, I know it's a little thing, but man, you're a billion-dollar company who's on TV every week. It's not like, I mean, look how much shit Game of Thrones got for having a water bottle in the background. Can we get on the WWE for a little bit of like a little bit of a better product in terms of quality of what we're visually seeing? Now this is where the divisiveness comes up. Roman Reigns is hit, and if we're gonna suspend belief, he's pretty injured. You know, he got hit by a car. Even if indirectly, at least some whiplash, maybe a shoulder injury. Joe immediately goes into protection mode. He goes to the door. He damn near rips it off. He checks on Reigns. He tells him not to move, don't move, yells for a medic. Very, very serious moment, very intense moment where Joe flips the switch. Now, do you think that this is in character of Samoa Joe, or do you think that they really messed up by having him give a shit about a man that he was claiming not even a minute ago that he was going to maim and destroy?
Oh, man, that's a tough one because, I mean, obviously this isn't a face turn from Joe in any stretch of the imagination. But I think,
right.
I think, you know, there comes a point where even in storyline terms, where even a wrestler who wants to beat you and defeat you and destroy you, there's a difference between that kind of, I'm going to attack you and choke you out, then I hope you get killed in a car crash, you know? him being out there witnessing the car crash right there, I don't think there's anything wrong with him going to Roman's aid right away. I mean, he is a person. What would you do as a person, you know?
Yeah, I gotta totally agree with you, and it's something that I thought immediately. It kind of, you know, I don't like writing the story for the WWE, but it kind of just put into perspective that, you know, this is our group of people, and if you want to be funny about it, it's Joe simply saying, "I wanted to be the car that hit him, not whoever the fuck is doing this." No, it was very interesting for me because it gave a level of character that we hadn't seen before. I'm always so about characters that are multi-leveled and multifaceted. This means Joe cares about his fellow man, also cares about his fellow wrestler. Like, that's Roman Reigns. I hate you. I fucking hate you. And realistically, I wanted to fight you because I want my name out of your mouth. But, like, I'm not going to hit you with a car. I'm going to hit you, but I'm not going to try to run you over. So it goes beyond a level of their animosity towards one another. And I thought it was a nice touch because what else would you do? I mean, if Joe just walked away from that, like, that's a dick move.
I was going to say, on top of that, once the mystery is revealed on who is driving the car, being it's not, I don't think it's going to be a drunk Uso, but once we finally figure out who was actually driving the car, that just adds to their villainy even more because a guy like Samoa Joe, who we're used to seeing as an evil villain, is concerned about Roman getting hit by a car. So the guy driving that car, he's the real evil villain, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I know you said Uso. I mean, I'm really hoping it's not, you know, Rikishi. he has a history. So, yeah, I enjoyed the Samoa Joe fold. I also feel like when we do find out who it is, Samoa Joe is going to be pissed off at that person too, which just kind of keeps him in the mix and keeps him in the loop. Because admittedly, when I saw the opening today, I thought we were going to get another tired and redone Joe versus Joe promo where it just doesn't help either one of us or either one of them. So immediately after this, we have a match, and this particular match is kind of a surprise. It's a tag match with Natalya and Trish Stratus returning to Raw versus Becky Lynch and Charlotte. I felt a lot of things when I saw the match here. Like, you know, why is Trish wrestling on Raw? Why would Trish team with Natalya? Of course, aside from Canada, why would Charlotte Flair, you know, team with Becky? So there was a lot of questions that I just felt like this match altogether didn't need to happen. When it started, I will readily admit that Natalya came out pretty fucking hot in terms of wrestling quality. I thought she looked good for the first, like, you know, I want to say at least until Charlotte got tagged in, and then it kind of slowed down and got boring. But would you, even though Trish Stratus didn't get in on the action per se, would you have rather had her not show up at all? Or do you think this was a good idea to show you that Trish Stratus can still look good in a one piece?
Well, that's all it was really, huh? Just to show you that she could still look good in her singlet, because she never tagged in. She never got in the match at all. And I think if they're going to book a tag match, at least let her in there. You know, you don't have to give away everything. You know, you don't want to save some stuff for SummerSlam. But can we at least see that she could still go? I mean, when's the last time we've seen – well, I guess at the Evolution pay-per-view was the last time we've seen her wrestle. Or did she wrestle at that pay-per-view? I don't even remember.
What's funny about the addition of Trish on Raw was how they made it such a big deal. But when you bring people to Raw the way that they do, especially with legends, where I can't remember the last time I saw, even on the Raw reunion, I saw somebody and I was just like totally floored at their presence, because they overuse, you know, people like Trish and everything. Now, Trish is a rare commodity where she can actually wrestle. She's still very, very fit, also very attractive. She adds value to whatever story she's in, even one against Charlotte. So I love seeing her, you know, from the male perspective, but from a wrestling fan's perspective and an analyst of the product, it kind of made me question, like, what was the reason? Now, if the only reason was for her to go out there and show that, you know, she's present and she exists, then I guess good job. But I think what ended up happening was there was a lot of things that overshadowed her presence. There was Becky and Charlotte, their little mini feud that they've had forever. Like, when Michael Cole says that these girls are forced to team together, then it doesn't make sense to have one of them walk out, because she never would have walked in to begin with. If you force me to do something, I'm going to have to do it, or I'm not going to do it at all, and I'm just going to be like, F you. So they kind of did a lot of little minor mistakes throughout the show, and that was one of them. Joe promo was another one. Where it wasn't a big deal, and it's probably me noticing it above anybody else because I'm unnecessarily, you know, analytical. But it just kind of made for an awkward match that I felt didn't really need to happen. At the same time, I just wanted to for sure give props to Natty, because I thought that was a great, like, start to a match. That show was nice.
I want to say this about Natty. I was all on board with her. I fell in love with her when she was wrestling that match. I was like, man, Natty could go in the ring. You know, why have I slept on Natty? Why do I not think about Natty as a legit contender? And then after the match, they had some dual interview segments, one with Becky Lynch where she cut a really awesome promo. Becky's mic skills are really great. And then they did an interview segment with Natalya right afterwards, and then I was like, oh, That's why I don't like Natalya.
It was so bad. I made a joke in the comment section of the Raw report at 411mania.com, and it was basically that, like, she does everything robotically as far as physicality. Like, she'll blink her eyes twice and then roll them. She'll look to the side of the screen and laugh and throw her head back. Like, evil villain, but, like, in a Disney play in a third grade, you know? Like, it was just bad. And then the delivery of the lines and her obvious inability to either remember lines or say them in a way that's real. Because even the words that she was using were repetitive. It didn't make sense. Like, if she puts me in an arm bar and even breaks my arm, that's fine. I'm still not going to tap out, even though I'm in an arm bar. Like, well, bitch, you can't tap out if your arm's broken, first of all. it's just very,
yeah.
it came off, like, really, really bad. And I totally agree with you on that. That is why, among other reasons, because that match, like I said, it was a tight five, you know, and the first half of it was very, very solid. Because in Natalya, like, it was really, really good. In that small moment, she just showed exactly why people can trust her in the ring. But then she spoke. So, you know, speaking of amazing matches, our next contest is Rey Mysterio versus Andrade. Now, I don't know the exact number of times that these guys have faced each other over on SmackDown. I don't know how many times they've seen each other on Raw. It could be close to 10. I don't care, because they just keep doing amazing things. Like, they won't stop. Even when it's, like, noticeably choreographed, like most lucha can be, it still comes off as just amazing. And I don't know if it's, you know, because I have Hispanic ties to them. but when they set up the Canadian Destroyer, it was obvious that they were setting it up. But it was forgivable, because it's a callback to their match before, to many of their matches before, and also just kind of fits the narrative of what's going on here. Andrade winning was cool, and it's one of those rare occasions where I want more, even after everything. Like, I want more. I want to see where this goes. I want to see if there's a little bit more to tell, what kind of story they could tell about the mask, what kind of, you know, like, I just want more. I want more, and that is so rare for people to, you know, to make me do that, and these guys did it. Now, obviously, Zelina was the reason why Andrade won. Now, do you feel that there's legs in a lengthy feud with them? And obviously, if it does happen at SummerSlam, it doesn't have the same importance, considering if the match will have had to be made tonight or tomorrow. Do you think that there's something here to tell? And if there is, would you rather it be a long story, you know, including maybe Dominic and a necessity to lose a mask? Or are you fine with just, I want to be better than you?
I'm fine with, I want to be better than you. I mean, I think it could be booked into a long-term feud. I mean, yeah, the match was excellent. It was awesome. I think Ray has actually gotten better with age, believe it or not. I mean, I was a big fan of this match. I kind of was surprised to see it on Raw and to see a semi-clean finish. I know Zelina got involved near the end, but, I mean, he still pinned Ray 1-2-3 after a hammerlock DDT. I really thought during the gauntlet match last week when he ripped the mask off of Ray that they were saving this for SummerSlam. And now I don't know if they're going to go on to SummerSlam with these two.
Yeah, I would. I mean, it's one of those things where I would love to see it, but I would also love to see a lengthy program that kind of led up to a match with some build. It's just one of those things where you wouldn't be mad either way. And I guess that's kind of a positive thing, kind of really telling of the quality of matches that they got. I just really loved everything. It was awesome. From an awesome match to a not so awesome segment. Now, you and I haven't spoken as far as a podcast goes since well before the introduction of the 24/7 title. I don't know how often you listen to the show. I don't know how often you read, you know, my feelings on it, but I despise everything about this belt. I see no qualities in it. I feel that the only shining star is R-Truth, and they use him way too much for it to be funny. I feel like they do what they've always done with the WWE. They find something that worked with the crowd, and they beat it to the ground. So, with that being said, we had a segment here that took us to the OBGYN of Maria, where she and her title and her also another segment that I hate in the WWE is this whole relationship with Maria and Mike. I don't find it entertaining. It has nothing to do with machismo. It has nothing to do with masochism or, you know, being a man. I just think it's shitty writing, and it's not a fully fleshed out story, so it comes off as cheesy and dumb. But anyways, we go to the OBGYN. Maria is soothed down to her shoulders and then pinned because the doctor was apparently a referee. And then the referee who Mike apparently hired or at least brought with him is so much of an asshole that she's willing to count another pin because R-Truth rolls him up after dressing in drag, tossing a baby and you know, making the pin. There's way too much wrong with this segment for me personally, and it would take a long time for me to point everything out, from the dressing to the costume to the question of into going to a fake OBGYN, to paying for costume. It's just too much for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you talk about this segment, and you'll probably be a little bit more positive, but ultimately let's suffice to say I hated it.
You hated it because you just don't like the 24/7 stipulation in general, I believe. I, on the other hand, I'm a fan of the 24/7 title. Look, I'm stupid. I like dumb stuff. I like to laugh. I like comedy stuff. Raw is a 3-hour show. If they can do these little small segments and get people that aren't usually on the show and just make you chuckle for the little time that it's given, the little airtime is given, then I find nothing wrong with it. I was waiting for somebody to pin Maria while she was laying on the doctor's bed. I didn't think it would be her husband, honestly. I thought R-Truth was going to dress up as the doctor himself and pin her. I was surprised that Mike got a title win. And then, like you said, R-Truth got the title right back. I don't know. I like to see the different things they come up with centered around this title. So I have no problem with it.
Okay. Well, this is why, you know, wrestling is for so many different people, because I found it dog shit. So let's fast forward, because we got what after that, Natty and the Becky, and then okay, Brock. Yay, Brock. Okay. So Heyman and Brock Lesnar come down to the ring, and I'm not going to go over what they said because to me personally it was nothing new. They said what they always say. Heyman uses so many words to say nothing. And then Seth Rollins comes out, and this is where it's interesting, because he comes out walking like he's 95 and has a bad back, using a chair as a cane, and is sure he still has enough energy to turn his hat around so that it's backwards. And he makes his way down to the ring with the chair, showing this never say die attitude, and Brock just destroys him, just beats his ass and hits him with an F5, and that'll be that. And we go to a commercial, and when we come back, Seth Rollins grabs a mic, and in immense pain and agony and questioning his future, he claims that he will be winning the title at SummerSlam. In fact, he guarantees it. Now, aside from his hat being backwards, did this segment work for you at all?
No, I don't think they needed it after the beatdown he was given just last week. I think they could have given him the week off of TV to sell the injuries. And when I heard Seth Rollins' music hit, I was already disappointed. Like, after what we saw Brock do to him last week, he shouldn't be here. The one saving grace was that he came out limping and walking like an old man, because at least he was still selling those injuries like a boss. Because if he would have just ran down that ring to get in Brock's face, I would have been severely disappointed. But I think he comes down limping and obviously still injured, and Brock beats him down again. I think they could have left it at that. I think that little promo that Seth cut afterwards was very unnecessary. And, you know, Seth's not ready, gets a lot of criticism as not being the best talker. So why give him an opportunity to get on the mic to promote this match?
The point, I mean, it's he the way he walked out was just over. It's over exaggerated. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an actor, so I don't know. I've never been beaten up by Brock Lesnar either, so I don't know how I would be walking after that. But the assumption is that I would not be walking the way Seth Rollins was. He looked like the Wicked Witch from Snow White. Like, I don't know what that was, but it just came off as hokey. Yeah, I definitely want him to sell the injuries. I definitely want to know that he's hurt. I mean, I don't know. Put him in a bed in the hospital and have him cut that cheesy promo of, you know, I'm never going to die. I don't think it was necessary. I think you were exactly right. The beatdown from last week was brutal enough for people to be like, damn, you could have even said Seth Rollins isn't here. It's not going to change anything. I think that personally, people are just not all that interested in this, and you can kind of tell by the crowd reaction while Seth was getting his ass beat, because we've seen it already, and it wasn't that good in the first place.
No, and then the beatdown last week was way more devastating. This is the go-home show, and we just get, like, a couple of kicks to already injured ribs and an F5.
Yeah. And the idea that, like, you know, they – I don't want to say they blew their wad last week, but, like, if this was reversed, maybe. I mean, he wouldn't have walked out like an idiot, obviously, but it just kind of would have made more sense linear. And the fact that he just got his ass beat and he's cutting a promo and the crowd is chanting what in the middle of it all, that kind of tells you something. Okay, so we go backstage. Kurt Angle is chilling with the Street Profits, and I've enjoyed them in small spurts, but when they talk longer than, you know, like a minute, it comes off as just overdoing it. But at the same time, I kind of thought this interaction with Kurt Angle was relatively cute, considering Kurt saying, I promised my wife I wouldn't get all wild tonight. Nice little callback to, you know, his past. But there was one interesting moment that blew me away. I said, whoa, out loud. And it just kind of, because it was so little, but it was so powerful. And I want to get your feelings on it, because a lot of people stand up for Drew McIntyre and how kind, he hasn't really been treated all that well. Like, he should be a menace. He should be imposing and everyone should be afraid of him. But there was this moment where he walked forward after, you know, insulting them a little bit. And it looks like he's about to step to Kurt Angle's face. And one of the Street Profits puts his hand out onto the chest of Drew and basically is like, nah, big fella, not today. And Drew just chilled. And he went on with his thing, like, I come in peace, I'm not here to attack, blah, 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 and went on with his promo. Now, for me personally, I thought that that was an amazing moment that I feel they will not ever capitalize on. Similar to when Big E hulked up in the in the number one contenders match. Like, I don't know why, but that was so real to me, and it was so badass, and it didn't hurt Drew in the slightest, in my opinion, and that's why I'm bringing it up, because I wanted to ask you, do you think Drew was hurt by that? Do you think it was a moment that made no sense, considering this is an NXT guy, and that's, you know, Drew McIntyre, WWE, or did you enjoy that particular little exchange? Because I blew a gasket, and it was a 0.2 second moment on Raw.
I don't think Drew was hurt by that one interaction with the Street Profits. I think he was hurt by a bunch of little interactions like that throughout the years, just sprinkled on there. You know, Drew is supposed to be this big, intimidating Scottish psychopath who cuts these really intense promos about how he's going to rip your entrails out and feed them to you. And he's basically getting the Bray Wyatt treatment of last year, where he talks a big game, cuts these good promos. He looks intimidating as all hell. And when he's in a big match, he loses. They not capitalizing on what they have with Drew McIntyre. And they almost need to rehabilitate him the same way they rehabilitated Wyatt. I mean, it's just, I think since they put him as Shane McMahon's lackey, his star power has gone down instead of going up. and it needed to go up.
Yeah, I got to feel you on that one. I think Shane McMahon has hurt quite a bit of people, and it's not because he's not entertaining. It's just that people want to see the wrestler right next to him more than they want to see Shane McMahon. So that's always, I mean, that's a gripe that, you know, we could talk about if we were on the SmackDown reaction. So immediately after that, we get the Viking Raiders versus two jobbers. I got nothing to say about this. So if you do, go ahead, but I'm not giving them my time.
Hey, I gotta say, I got Ivor in my fantasy league. My wife has both Ivor and Eric. So, hey, keep on destroying jobbers and get me points.
Nice. Okay, so the next match was supposed to be Drew versus Cedric, where Kurt Angle was the referee. This was another moment that I think would kind of divide the crowd, considering the usage of Kurt Angle. The match never started due to Drew McIntyre surprise attacking Cedric. They kind of get the they kind of exchange, you know, some moves back and forth. The match never gets underway. Kurt Angle stands in the ring, you know, aloof as usual with his mouth open face. I've always liked when he does that face. He looks so surprised at everything. And then the lights go out. And we shoot to the ring when they go back on, and they kind of flicker red and black, and it's the Fiend with the mandible claw onto Kurt Angle. Now, a few things here. Noticeable mention of the mandible claw and how it was used, especially considering what he did to Foley. Also, Drew and Cedric, apparently they just stopped fighting because the lights went out. And Kurt Angle, you know, doesn't really do much action, gets the claw on him, and that's that. Are you okay with Bray Wyatt being the seemingly new legend killer here, or do you think this is just a way to get him on TV until they're ready for the big moment, which is at SummerSlam?
Yeah, I think that this is just a way to get him on TV. I know this is a Wyatt segment, but I want to continue making my point about Drew McIntyre here, because as you can see, Drew McIntyre is a background piece in this segment here to promote Bray Wyatt. Like, Drew McIntyre shouldn't be playing background. He shouldn't be the background tree in the school play to anybody. He should be the star of something. So I just want to get that off my chest. But as far as Wyatt being the new legend killer, I mean, I like him. Who else is he going to attack, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you with regards to Drew. I always, you know, it's one of those things where you sit there and you're like, oh, man, he'll get his chance soon. He'll get his chance soon. But then you see people that you say that about, and their star kind of just fades away. And I've talked to Harry about the ability to create a star using moments and basically doing it incredibly quickly. You can build a match, if properly done, in one show. You know, and I've seen it done before, very rarely with the WWE, and I've seen people do moments, just like I mentioned before, with Angelo holding Drew back, like those little things, where it builds an investment of emotion. So it's not impossible to make Drew matter. They can do it immediately after SummerSlam. They can do it during SummerSlam. It's just that they don't, and I don't know if it's because they feel they don't have room in the main event scene, or they just don't know what they're doing. Now, of course, we're in this little purgatory period where we don't know, we'll see some immediate results, but we won't know the scope of changes in the WWE by Heyman and Bischoff for at least another couple of months. Personally, I think that aside from the little things like the way Raw started tonight and you know, the scaffolding falling and shit like that, but I'm hoping that it changes the way that we perceive the characters, because Drew is a perfect example of great promo, believable mindset. Every promo that he cuts makes sense to me, because it works. Like, he came back and he looked at this locker room that he left, and he's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? Like, why are you not training right now? Why are you playing video games? Why are you not loving this business that I got kicked out of and had to fight and claw to get back in? And he does it in such a way where you hate him, so it's believable and it works. Now, I feel like that's one of those things where the character is right there in front of you. All you got to do is fucking knock it out the park. So I totally feel you on that. Um, Where are we at? Oh, okay. So Big E and Woods, the New Day, they apparently now, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the wild card rule. I don't know if the brand extension even exists anymore. But I mentioned the minute that the club won the titles that they were going to interact with New Day. And I'm not calling myself a soothsayer. I'm just calling them predictable. And we got even more predictability tonight when we saw them lock up and AJ was out there only to see an attack in like 7 seconds and Ricochet to come out. Now, I'm not mad that Ricochet came out to help. It makes sense storyline-wise, but also it's just kind of like cliche and a little bit annoying. The match itself, I want to say it was average, if not a little bit below average. I kind of think that Gallows, as powerful as he is, sometimes comes off a little bit more Festus than Gallows. Could be the way he walks. I don't know. But this was ultimately a way to get, you know, to sell the match coming up between AJ and Ricochet, which is going to be amazing. Do you feel that the club, in its present incarnation, especially considering that they have the tag team titles, do you feel like this is a stable that has legs? That's funny. Do you think that this is a stable that has legs that can move well into the future, even these three men?
I do. I think if they take them seriously, if they book them, this is pretty much kind of what I wanted them – the way I wanted them to get booked when they first came on the scene. They had so much hype around them from what they did in Japan, and I don't think that's another, like, missed opportunity, not capitalizing while they're hot, you know? Because people knew who the Bullet Club was, and everybody was waiting for Gallows and Anderson to come out and be with AJ Styles. And once they came out, they really looked like, you know, some jokes. I think now they're finally starting to look like, you know, the badass team that they were meant to be. And I want to point out Gallows coming out with the face paint that he used to wear in Japan. I think that is just – I know it's little and it's a small little tweak, but that makes him look just that much more – like more believable of a star, I gotta say. I like the faceplate look on Luke Gallows.
I mean, it's something. Like it's something different, and sometimes that's all you need, you know. And I like that the announcers kept it sweet and short. It's a callback to his Japan days. It's way better than them trying to tell me an entire story about how Sarah Logan loves Vikings. So it's sometimes short and sweet is better. Sometimes letting it speak for itself is better. All right, so we move on to.
Let me ask you
something,
Tony. Before we move on, I want to ask you something about this. So in this six-man match, the club, who are the Raw Tag Team Champions, pinned the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the New Day. Do you think they should, would, or could unify the tag belts and just have one tag division with one tag team champs, much like the women's tag division is?
I have a weird feeling that that's the direction that they're going. When you look at the tag teams, the list of tag teams in the WWE, it's not that it's impossible. It's just that if you have teams on either show, well, let me put it this way. What makes which ones better? The fact that Raw is on Raw and SmackDown is on SmackDown? Because if that's the case, why do the blue belts matter? And I think that now that they're blending the shows more and that it doesn't really matter too much who's on who's where, then the titles become kind of insignificant. You know, the U.S. title has a lineage. The IC title has a lineage, and they don't belong to a brand. I mean, one could argue that, you know, IC is Raw through and through, and U.S. is, you know, SmackDown, but not really. I would argue against that, and I think that I would win the argument. But when it comes to the Raw Smack Team or the Raw Tag Team titles and the SmackDown Tag Team titles, those very obviously belong to one specific brand. And brand loyalty doesn't exist if you have no brand-specific roster. So the titles become incredibly diminished. And then when you have a match like tonight, they become diminished even more because ultimately one team is better than the other, making the titles that they hold less significant than the others. So that's the long-winded answer. The short one is, yes, I do believe that they're going to eventually, you know, combine them. Should they? I mean, sure, why not? Do they have to? They don't. They just they would just have to switch things a little bit more specifically for them to matter. So, yeah, I think it's only a matter of time before we get one team.
All right, I hope they do, because if you look at the tag team rosters on Raw and the tag team rosters on SmackDown, you always, I mean, in this brand split era, there's usually one or two, maybe three good tag teams in both divisions. And I don't see how you can carry on a division with just three teams trading matches back and forth, trading titles back and forth.
Yep. Okay, so well, speaking of tag team titles, let's move to the women, the Fatal 4-Way Elimination Match. This was kind of a surprise, at least to me. Didn't really see it coming. And when it did, I kind of saw the writing on the wall. Now, I'm a little biased towards these titles just in general, because the very first team to win them kind of, in my opinion, got screwed out of them and the legacy that they really wanted to create. I don't think that this match helped that cause, but there was a change in the title holders, and I think a lot of people are happy about that, so let's talk about it. Kabuki Warriors, I believe they at one point had a title shot. I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like that was written somewhere. And then Mandy Rose and Sonya have been a team for quite some time, and then of course you have Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss doing their crazy wacky team. So once the match was announced, I kind of saw that it was only obvious that the titles were going to change. And they did start off with Kay and Royce kind of getting the upper hand on everybody. So it was a little bit of a red herring, but it worked for me. I really thought, okay, well, maybe this is their way of reestablishing them as tag team champions, so that when they do have a match come SummerSlam, it makes a little more sense. Boy, was I wrong. They were the first team eliminated almost immediately, and they were eliminated by Mandy Rose, of all people, who would have helped Harry really well in the fantasy league that we have had it been this week. Sorry. Poor Harry. Okay, so and then after that, we get we eventually get the elimination of Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, followed by, Asuka and Zayn getting eliminated, ultimately crowning Alexa Bliss and Nikki as the new tag team champions. This team, at least on TV.
Bite me.
That must be Harry listening to us. This team, I don't know, this team hasn't been consistent on TV. I know some people think they have, but I think it's because we've been filling in the gaps. If this turns into an Alexa Bliss face turn where it's just, she really does like Nikki, she's not trying to use her or anything, then I think it might ultimately work. But as of right now, Alexa's one of those people who has a firm grasp on her character and does so well with it. I personally love her. It has very little to do with her amazing ass. Nikki is a character that is barely growing, and she seems to love to be attached to Bliss. So I don't know. I think it'll work, even if I have a sour spot for these titles specifically. Do you think the right team won? And if not, who would you have had win? And if you do, where did they go from here?
I mean, honestly, any team other than the Iconics was the right team to win. And this is coming from an Iconic fan. I am a fan of theirs. I'm a fan of their slimy heel work. They actually did defend the titles against the Kabuki Warriors on SmackDown and got intentionally counted out, like Honky Tonk Man style, just to be able to keep their titles, which I was a fan of that too. I think what hurt the Iconics is just not being booked to be on the show. When they first won the titles, and they were on Raw, and they were defending their title, their championships against the formidable team of the whatever local jobber team, and they're playing them up as these local tag team wrestlers are like awesome competitors. Like I thought that was good heel work, and I enjoyed it, but
yeah,
they were just left off of television for just too long. that people started forgetting about them, forgetting about the division in itself, that they had to push reset. You can't just rehabilitate the Iconics and bring them back as good heel tag champs. So any of these teams could have won the titles, and it would have been a good call.
Yeah, got you. All right. So we go to the main event segment of the show, I guess. And there have been rumors going on for a while about Goldberg wanting to return to the ring for a match that is not a clunker like the last one that he had. Basically, he wants to redeem himself in the eyes of the fans and himself. And one man who seemingly everyone seems to agree with being able to do that is Dolph Ziggler. Over the past few weeks, we've been watching Ziggler in this semi-feud with The Miz, which kind of includes HBK, kind of doesn't. And personally, I've found every Dolph Ziggler promo to be just atrocious, just like a unnecessarily high-pitched, yelping, complaining, you know, persona who does have some points from a heel perspective, but just comes off as an annoying character. Thankfully, The Miz kind of calls him out on it, and it makes for at least somewhat compelling TV on one side. This is a rare occasion where a contract signing kind of fools the bad guy, and I thought that was an interesting take. However, Dolph Ziggler's continuously looked like a chump, which, I mean, I can't disagree with. The decision ultimately is, or the trick that The Miz pulled on him is that the match that Dolph signed for is against Goldberg at SummerSlam. Now, this would have been a huge, you know, announcement, and I think that they built it up to be really big. It was the main event segment of Raw before the pay-per-view. And to me, it just kind of came off a little flat. I mean, it kind of goes with what I was saying earlier in the show, where the overusage of these legends due to, like, overseas pay-per-views and just Raws like we had a few weeks ago, and the idea of seeing these people who just don't have the same energy causes for moments that should be huge to be kind of somewhat bleh. And that, of course, that could just be me as a jaded fan. That could just be me as me because of how I am. But I'm here to ask you, the announcement of Goldberg, was it shocking to you? I mean, you know, you got the finger on the pulse, so I don't think it might have been. And if it wasn't, you know, are you okay with this decision? And lastly, do you think it's going to be a good match?
Well, okay. So first of all, about the shocking aspect of it, you know, like you said, I got my finger on a pulse. Most people listening to this podcast off of the chair shot probably have their finger on the pulse, where we all heard the rumors and the speculations that Goldberg was coming back. But realistically, if you didn't hear those rumors, if you didn't know it was going to be Goldberg, in what world is the main event of Monday Night Raw, the contract signing for the big SummerSlam matchup of Dolph Ziggler versus The Miz? Like, if they did not have a big star like Goldberg to end the show, like, how else do you end the show?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think it's lost its luster for me personally. But I do find it, my favorite part of this is that The Miz was smart enough to trick Ziggler. That to me just kind of was cool with
now,
me. Like,
does that show smarts on The Miz's part, or does that just really show how stupid Dolph Ziggler is that he signed his name on a contract and next to his name couldn't have said Miz? He had to have said Goldberg on that contract. How do you miss that?
Yeah, because we've seen the contract. Those names are pretty big.
Really? Really?
Take the fish. All right, well, that brings us to the end of Raw and to the end of this episode. Rick, you've been a pleasure. I've missed you. I've missed your voice. I really have.
Take the fish.
So now we're going to do what we always do and have the final reaction. So I guess I'll ask you first, and then you could switch it around, and we'll end the show with me. Your favorite match or moment on Raw?
Oh, the best match was was easy, and I'm sure you'll probably have the same answer. Rey Mysterio versus Andrade. I mean, what an excellent, fun match to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I can't disagree with you. Okay, well, your least, I don't know if you know this, but our least favorite match or moment has been renamed to the Greg Watry moment of the night. Watry, because he is by far the worst writer ever on 411. And Greg, because he's our Lord and Savior, Greg is Christ, and we just combined the names. So, yeah, your Greg Watry moment of the night.
Oh, I thought that was you know, a little innuendo to the some people actually think Justin Watry is the pseudonym Greg DeMarco alias.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. It's because it's Greg, and, you know, we like to make fun of Greg.
So,
because that's how I roll.
The worst moment, man, I actually like 24/7 stuff, so I'm not going to list that as the worst moment. I'm going to give it a tie between just the misuse of Drew McIntyre in general. I mean, he never even got to get a victory over Cedric Alexander. He still looks like a chump. That and just Natalya's interview mic skills is just horrible.
Yeah, that promo was pretty shitty. Okay, so your MVP of the show?
MVP of the show, Andrade. I mean, I could give it to Ray. I guess I'm going to give it to Andrade.
All right. Okay, and your final rating?
Man, you know, it was a good show. When you asked me for my least favorite moment, I had a hard time picking one. If I have a hard time picking a least favorite moment, and not because there's so much to choose from, but because I'm trying to think of really bad moments, that's a really good show. I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8.
Oh, wow. All right.
That's generous.
Well, I've been away for a while, so allow me to come back with a positive mindset.
Okay, real quick here. Favorite match or moment was Andrade and Rey. Least favorite match or moment was the 24/7 title shenanigans. Overall show MVP was Angelo Dawkins for his performance in that backstage segment with Kurt Angle. And my overall show rating was a 6. Tony, you're up.
That's Harry. Hi, Harry. All right, Rick, play Mr. Interviewer.
What was your favorite match or moment?
I'm going to have to double down on yours. Rey versus Andrade was amazing. I really, really enjoyed that.
And what was your least favorite match or moment?
Oh, you already know. There was quite a few to pick from. Natty's promo was ass. Joe and Reigns, although the energy was there, it raised way more questions than answers. But ultimately, it's going to fall in the hands of the great OBGYN segment. I cannot find a single thing about that is redeemable. From a fake waiting room to a fake doctor to a wife who is seemingly smarter than her husband at every turn except for this one particular moment, to R-Truth and drag and Carmella dressing up like a dude, to throwing a baby, to a roll-up pin counted by a ref who was apparently hired by Mike but now cares strong enough about her ref morals to count for R-Truth. All of it was just great, great, great garbage. It was horrible.
And your MVP?
Shit. I'm always surprised when I get asked this, as if it's never happened for every single week for like 6 years. I'm going to go with, you know what? I'm actually going to, I'm going to go with what Harry said because of how well it resonated with me. And I actually messaged Harry about it the minute that it happened, because it was just a super cool moment. And that's Angela holding Drew back. So small. I highly doubt they'll capitalize on it. And if they do, it's going to be a Drew squash match where he, like, fucking big boots his ass down to the mat and that's it. But for me, for that, those are the moments that make superstars, I think. Those are the moments that they need to do more of. And those are the moments that, that work for me. So I'm definitely going to call Angelo the MVP for sure.
And your overall grade?
The rating that I'm going to give it is a 6 as well. Wrestling quality-wise, we had that one great match. I think that Natty did amazing in the beginning of her match until Charlotte slowed it down. The women's tag match was just kind of all over the place, where some of it was good, but most of it was kind of sloppy. And then you have the quality of the entertainment, where it's just, I feel the change is coming. I think I said this last week with the show, where I feel like there is a genuine effort, and it makes me feel way happier than I did a month ago. So, like, whereas a month ago, if I were to give the show like a 5, I would be talking about just how much it was bad. Now, today I'm saying 6, and I'm saying I see the hope, you know. You have to keep in mind that this was supposed to be a build-up to SummerSlam. I don't feel that. SummerSlam is supposed to be like number 2 or 3 of the big 4. I do not feel that energy at all. I just don't. And that's unfortunate, because the card looks relatively good. And it's just not there. And it's not because I don't like wrestling anymore. I just went to go see a 800-year-old Scott Steiner face an amazing technician like Orange Cassidy, and I had a great time. I just don't. So it's not the lack of love for wrestling. I think it's a lack of intrigue. You know, if you go to bar wrestling or an indie show like I did, there isn't a real big dependency on storyline. You know, but if you're watching a weekly episodic something or other, you have an expectation of an engaging story. For instance, if you watch bar wrestling or indie wrestling, you go there because you're expecting a really good match or good matches. That's their selling point. That's what you're going to get. There's not really much of a story you could tell over the course of a few months. Rather, you get a story in the ring. You know, it's rare that an indie match is like 4 minutes, whereas on Raw they're 4 minutes because they're trying to tell a story. They're trying to engage you to hypothetically want to watch the longer match that eventually will happen. So the expectations are way different. And when I expect certain things from WWE, I feel like I haven't been fully satiated for a very long time because of their inability to create good content, their laziness, their haphazardness, their inability to stick to something. I mean, look at how many rules they made up over the past 6 months just to break them down and forget about them. So ultimately, it creates a rating system where it's going to be a rare, rare case where I'm giving this show anything above like a 7. So yes, 6 out of 10. That doesn't hold up the Raw reaction this week. Well, how did Steiner do?
No, how did Steiner react to Orange Cassidy's shenanigans?
Well, you know what's funny is Joey Ryan was Orange Cassidy's partner, and Steiner teamed with Brian Cage. And Steiner got on the mic and basically called everybody that was cheering for Joey Ryan a fag. Like, he went full anti-gay. And it was really interesting to see, because it wasn't shocking, but it's 2019. And you don't understand how much this world has changed until you're in a room and you're like, oh shit, he just said that. And because 5 years ago, that wouldn't have mattered. 10 years ago, they would have cheered. They would have like fucking blew the roof off the place. But now it's like, oh, well, that's uneasy. Okay.
That's not cool.
So his response to Joey Ryan was actually pretty interesting, because, you know, Joey Ryan gets in the ring and says, touch my dick, and the entire crowd is chanting for Scott Steiner to touch his dick. And Steiner's just like, what the fuck's wrong with you guys?
Yeah,
but then Orange Cassidy
Steiner
comes
putting
in.
Up with that.
Yeah, and he, you know, Cassidy does his thing, and Steiner sells it, you know, as well as one would. But the crowd loved it. I loved it. I was dying laughing. I loved the entire fucking – every single moment that Orange Cassidy was in the ring. I loved it. But you got the feeling and the impression that Steiner was well aware of what was going on, and he was totally cool with it. He hit inverted atomic drop and sold it like Joey Ryan's dick was made of steel. So that was cool. He was totally on board. But, you know, I thought it was great. I also saw Tommy Dreamer, who I've never seen before. That was cool. He took some cookie trays from the crowd and used them on Tyler Bateman. Bar wrestling is just an all-around good product. I enjoy going.
Awesome.
All right, that does it for this week. I believe Harry will be back next week. We'll be doing our response to Raw. We'll probably talk a little bit about SummerSlam, I'm sure. And, you know, I guess that's it. Rick, you're welcome back anytime. Even if we have three people, you can call in. You can say what's up. You can not. I would pimp the fantasy page, but it's not like anybody else can join right now, so it'd be kind of pointless. Just know that if you're not a part of our fantasy league, you're missing out because it's tons of fun. It keeps you engaged in the product. And I don't know, with this year, with the 24/7 title, I don't know what the hell is going to happen. I mean, that's a lot of points for a title change that'll probably happen like five times.
Yeah, man, Mike Kanellis, he would have gotten 25 points tonight. Freaking Mike.
Yeah, man. And who the hell is going to choose that guy?
To steal a line from Iron Sheik here, fucking bullshit!
Yeah. Harry, you got some good picks, man. I see you being a front runner for the win here.
You know, Harry,
hey, Tony?
You should have never criticized.
Yeah.
You should have never criticized my son's wrestling ability.
All right. All I know is that I'm not going to be happy this year until I see Rick with the Divas title in his hands again. So. All right, guys. That's
Let
it
the record-
for tonight. Go ahead and let the record
state that at least once this year, Tony, you need to pick Sasha Banks up off of waivers.
Oh, you know it's going to happen. Oh, you know for a fact it's going to happen. All right, guys, that's it for me. That's it for Rick right here. We're going to come back next week and talk your ear off about Raw. Thanks again, Rick.
Thank you all for having me.
Deuces, bitches.
You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and a third co-host to be determined will discuss SummerSlam Takeover and Monday Night Raw here on the Raw Reaction on the Chairshot Radio Network. Always use your head. Okay, Rick, fine. I'll stick around for a few seconds and do some predictions with you, okay?
All right.
Since Tony backed out of the predictions, I guess I can do predictions. Hi, everyone. Harry Broadhurst here. How's everyone doing today? I wasn't in the right frame of mind watching tonight's episode of Raw. I didn't want to come on the show and be bitter about it, so I decided to just produce the show, take my vacation from the show as I planned, and now we can do some predictions. You know, there are 10 matches
it's
announced
my fault.
Already.
It's my fault.
No,
you're
it had nothing.
Me.
Maybe I'm mad at your son. Damn it, Ty.
Dude, have you gone back and watched the video? It's pretty damn funny.
I have not gone back and watched the video yet. I have issues with family today is kind of what had me turned off towards doing the show tonight.
It is a part in it, so
that.
The people who missed the draft. And I'm sorry about that, by the way. But the people who missed the draft, my 4-year-old son got to pick their names off the table. We had like all the wrestlers' names printed out. So he picked for the people that couldn't be there. And I told him, I said, Ty, you have to go pick for Mr. Harry now. Now listen, Mr. Harry saw you wrestling the other day, and he was criticizing your work. And Ty made this mean old face, like, how dare you criticize me. And I said, now go pick two names for Harry.
I wasn't criticizing his work. I was criticizing yourself.
You said he
How
had
about
no
them
legal
apples?
Awareness because he didn't pin me after he did his tornado DVD.
You had to tell him. You had to tell him to pin you. The only way it would have been worse if you'd have been laying on your stomach and he tried to pin you, right, Cameron?
I was calling my spots like John Cena.
You're way too fucking loud. All right, let's do some SummerSlam predictions, Rick. You ready?
Yeah, let's do some rapid-fire predictions because I don't get the bet.
Yeah, there are at present 10 matches, so we're just going to try to blow through these as quickly as possible. We'll start with the one that got announced on the end of tonight's show, Goldberg-Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, that's easy. Goldberg in about 3 minutes. Spear, jackhammer, go home.
I was going to say, I think it's adorable that you think they're going 3 minutes. I don't think they break two. Bell, spear, jackhammer, goodbye. Balor versus The Fiend.
Well, that's another easy one. I like that you're starting off with the easy ones. I think you're doing this on purpose. The Fiend,
bit.
Bray Wyatt. I mean, everybody kind of heard the reports that Finn wants to take a little bit of time off, and this is a good way to start pushing The Fiend right.
Not only that, I think that you need to give The Fiend and Bray specifically an opportunity to make a strong impression coming out of the gate. This is another match that I think should be a squash. I don't think this should go more than 5 minutes, and Bray should just beat Balor from corner to corner for the entirety of it. Balor should get no offense in this match. Sami Zayn versus Aleister Black.
Sorry, Harry. I know you're rooting for Sami Zayn. Aleister Black's going to beat him.
I think it'll be a good match, though. I think that'll be comparable to the matches that Aleister had against Cesaro at Extreme Rules and then the night after on, and then 2 nights after on SmackDown. Trish Stratus and Charlotte Flair.
I have to say Charlotte. Charlotte doesn't really need to beat a legend to put herself over, but at the same time, what's Trish going to do with a victory over Charlotte? Charlotte's going to beat Trish so she can call herself the queen of any era, and it would actually mean more after she beats Trish.
If this show were anywhere other than Toronto, I'd agree with you. But since this show's in Toronto, I think Trish picks up the hometown win and starts the crowd happy. So I wouldn't be surprised if this match actually opens the show. The main card of SummerSlam, let me be specific. Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon.
Man, I kind of want to wait and see what happens tomorrow night. Are they going to add a stipulation that if Shane loses, he has to leave? I got to say Kevin Owens. But usually, if it's a one-sided stipulation, sometimes you like that one-sided stipulation to actually lose to build a story around that. You know, Kevin Owens has to quit. Now we have to see how he's going to get his job back. But I'm just going to say Kevin Owens is going to beat Shane.
Kevin Owens has to quit. Kevin Steen comes back. Kill Steen, kill.
Is that your prediction?
I would not be opposed to that actually happening. I think Kevin has to win this match. I think Kevin has to win this match because you've done so much to build Shane up here that you have to use that for somebody. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Owens be that guy. Plus, there's a familiarity level with these two before because of the Hell in a Cell match that they had as well.
I'm just worried if they're going to stick with that old news story we got a while back. And, you know, you have Shane beat Kevin Owens, and then you have him go on to actually beat Kofi Kingston to be the World Heavyweight Champion.
No, I think if you were going to have Shane beat Kofi for the belt, they would have done that match at SummerSlam. I don't think that you're going to build all the way. That doesn't seem like a Survivor Series match to me. SmackDown Live Women's title, Bayley versus Ember Moon.
I think Ember Moon takes it. If I'm looking at the card and I'm looking at the title matches, there's not many title matches I see that are going to change hands. And this being SummerSlam, you have to have some titles change hands. And this is one of the ones that I can see a title changing hands.
I disagree. I think Ember eating the pinfall in that tag match on SmackDown is problematic for her. I think that that tells me that they don't see enough in her to worry about protecting her in a tag match on SmackDown where they could have done a disqualification finish. And instead, they chose to have Ember eat the pinfall. I think Bayley's title reign means more right now. I think the fact that they're establishing Bayley's new persona means more to SmackDown than Ember Moon does, and therefore Bayley wins and retains. AJ Styles versus – oh, let's do the Raw women's title match first here. Submission match is Becky Lynch takes on Natalya, who, if you didn't know, even if she had her arm broken, she still wasn't going to tap.
Jesus Christ, Natalya. So this is what I think. And I just thought of this on the fly since you said that about Natalya's promo. I think Becky puts in the disarmer. True to her word, Natalya refuses to tap. And Ronda Rousey shows up to make sure Natalya doesn't get her arm broken. Throw in a towel, Bob Backlund style, she's gonna do something.
Style.
But yeah, but Becky Lynch
Survivor Series 1994 for the youngins listening to us. You just dated both of us really badly there, Rick. I think Becky wins clean, and actually, you know what? I made this prediction on the show last week, and I'm going to stand by it. You remember the segment that we saw with Fit Finley training Natalya on how to counter the disarmer into the sharpshooter?
Yeah.
I think Natalya gets arrogant and goes for the disarmer, and Becky uses that exact counter to put Natalya in the sharpshooter and taps her out with her own move.
Oh. Yeah.
All right. Rumor is IC title match to be added to the pre-show, Ali versus Shinsuke Nakamura.
Man, this one is tough. This is kind of going along with what I was saying earlier about not that many titles I see change of hands. I hate for Nakamura to lose just quickly, and I don't want Shinsuke to just be a transitional champion. But I'm going to say Ali. I'm going to go with Ali.
I think Ali has something with this new character that he's doing on SmackDown. I think that there's potential there, and I think that there is a very strong group of fans that is behind him, and there is an opportunity for a lot of outreach with Ali and the fact that he is portrayed the way he is compared to a typical Muslim portrayal inside of the United States. So I think Ali takes the IC title. The U.S. title is AJ Styles defending against Ricochet.
Yeah, I think AJ is going to hold on to that belt. He might get help
AJ
from the club.
I don't think AJ
needs
Ricochet the
title.
I really don't.
Ricochet is going to be over without a championship belt.
I don't think AJ needs the title, though. And if AJ does need a title, I think it would make more sense to have AJ chase the Universal title rather than the United States title.
Yeah.
So I think Ricochet takes the U.S. belt here. Of course, these may or may not be my predictions for the actual FWL prediction pool that we do. I could just be saying shit to throw you off, Rick. You don't know. WWE Championship match, Kofi Kingston defend against Randy Orton.
I think this is going to be Kofi's redemption story. Kofi's going to beat Randy Orton. He's going to retain. I'm trying to look down the line to see who would be the one to finally dethrone Kofi. And I'm having trouble coming up with a name. But, yeah, I think Kofi's going to beat Randy Orton.
I think Kofi, you're going to have to send somebody over to SmackDown full-time in order to take the belt off of Kofi. And either that or they're going to do what they said they wouldn't do. They're going to break up New Day, and it'll be Big E.
I would like that, actually.
Tony talked about the fact that we saw a side of Big E that we haven't seen before when he was firing up on Monday Night Raw and at Extreme Rules in the tag match there. And Tony's exactly right. That's a side of Big E that we haven't seen before, but it's a side of Big E that I think could connect with a very large portion of the fan base. Even more so, too, is if you go the other route and you turn Big E heel, instead of doing it as a friendly match, and you eventually have it where Big E turned his back on the New Day, then you would have even more support for Kofi, and Big E would be the dick that broke up the most popular act in the company, at least from a merchandise standpoint. The Universal title is on the line when Brock Lesnar defends against Seth Rollins and his awful promo skills.
I think Seth's gotta win. Seth's gonna. I mean, you know that old adage they always say: whoever leaves goes on top on television is gonna do the job on the pay per view. Well, shoot, that's 2 weeks in a row that Brock Lesnar went on top over Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is gonna have to win.
If it were anyone other than Brock Lesnar, I'd be inclined to agree with that, but Lesnar's booking has been so scattershot ever since he came back to the company in 2012 that you don't know what the fuck they're going to do with him. That being said, I do think that the only reason they took the title off of Seth in the first place is to get rid of that Damocles sword that was the Money in the Bank briefcase hanging over his head with Lesnar. I think Seth takes the title here as well. And this is another reason I think AJ drops the US title, because I think we could definitely see babyface Seth versus heel AJ for the Universal Championship going forward, especially with Styles having the backup of Gallows and Anderson now. That's everything that's announced so far. There's like three more matches rumored, because apparently SummerSlam's supposed to be like 14 matches and 9.5 hours long.
Yeah, we can go over some rumored ones. I know one of them is Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan's the one that's been trying to kill him.
See, that was one of the rumors. The other rumor that I heard about the guy that was allegedly trying to attack him was Buddy Murphy, because Murphy was seen walking away from the set backstage when the thing came tumbling down towards Reigns. I don't think Buddy Murphy's a big enough name to be the guy that attacked Roman Reigns, but I think Buddy Murphy has the talent to hang with a Roman Reigns.
Maybe Buddy Murphy did it for The Rock.
Maybe The Rock was driving the car. Well, could you imagine that? Wouldn't that be some shit? Apparently, Rock took Fast and Furious a little too seriously here. Slow down, Dwayne! Here's the issue that I have with Roman and Brian, though. It's the fact that it's 6 days away from SummerSlam. Don't get me wrong. I think the match would be good, and if I'm not mistaken, they actually have met before, I do believe, on pay-per-view. I want to say in like 2015 or so.
Yeah, the Roadblock pay-per-view. Pay-per-view right at WrestleMania, they wrestled. Daniel
it was
Bryan,
yeah, where the winner advanced to WrestleMania to take on the winner of the Triple H Dean Ambrose match.
Right. And they thought
so. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say that was the match that they were kind of hoping that if Bryan would put over Roman and then shake his hand after the match, that the crowd would actually get behind Roman Reigns. Because he was having trouble getting fan support, and he's supposed to be the top babyface.
2015 Royal Rumble. Where was that at? Oh, yeah, Pittsburgh. I was in that club that turned on Roman when he won the Rumble. True story. All right. Oh, no, that was the Batista Rumble. That was 14. My mistake. Never mind. Ignore me. I'm slow. 2015 was Philadelphia, which may have been dumber because you're really trying to put Roman Reigns over to the fans that love ECW. That makes sense. All right. I don't think we have anything else. The only other match that I've heard rumored is Drew Gulak defending the Cruiserweight title against Oney Lorcan. And I sincerely doubt that you get to watch Oney Lorcan, the former Biff Busick.
Really? I thought Humberto would be the guy.
The rumored match is Lorcan, which is weird because Lorcan still plays a pretty pivotal role in NXT as part of the tag team with Danny Burke.
Right.
So We'll see what happens. You going to watch TakeOver on Saturday as well?
Probably not.
Are you going to watch TakeOver eventually, even if you don't get to watch it live on Saturday?
Dude, I am not up to date on NXT at all.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm like a month behind anyways, but I'm going to binge watch those shows before TakeOver this Saturday night, so I'm ready for it.
No, but I am planning on watching All Out on the 31st.
You lost me at $50 for a fucking pay-per-view in 2019. I'm sorry. No.
Yeah, but I'm going to have some friends come over.
Chip in.
We're going to split the bill.
I mean, that's
the plan.
That's more acceptable. That's how it used to be back when the WWE pay-per-views were like $50. Have friends come over, charge $7 a person. You get 5 people to show up. You're only out $15 for the show, you know?
Yeah. I can't complain too bad because they gave us 2 for free already. They gave us Fighter Fest and Fight for the Fallen for free. So.
Yeah, but both of those free shows
were
basically house. Both of those free
they
shows
were
basically
good.
House shows.
It was still good.
They were okay.
What do you think the AEW pay-per-view schedule is going to be like once they have a TV deal?
Quarterly. They've already announced that. Quarterly.
See, I like that. I think that's a lot better. You could build up better stories. And if they do a quarterly pay-per-view schedule and charge $50 for their pay-per-views, that's fine. I'll save up. I'll have friends come over, you know?
Oh, no, I'm okay with the idea of quarterly pay-per-views. I think the WWE should consider getting rid of some of their B-show pay-per-views and going back to no more than, like, 6 or 8 a year. There should not be a February pay-per-view at all. It's a fucking dumb idea because you're diluting the concept of WrestleMania by having another pay-per-view in between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. And this year they had 2 in between the Rumble and WrestleMania.
Harry, we need a pay-per-view on our birthday month. Come on, man.
I disagree. I don't think we do. And I say this despite the fact that there have been a couple of times where that pay-per-view date has landed right on my birthday.
And the day before mine.
Yes, for those of you who don't know, Rick and I were born a day apart. I'm not sure if the years line up. I don't think they do. I think I'm a little bit older than you are.
All right. Well, dude, this was great talking, but it's already 12, so I need to go to sleep so I can get at least 4 hours before I get up for work. My wife thinks I was crazy for agreeing to do this.
And then agreeing to stay on and do pay-per-view predictions, you dumbass.
I know.
Thanks for filling in, Rick. We missed you.
If Vince can function off of 2, I can function off of 4.
Good night.
Hey, if they need a third man next week, I'm in too, though.
Liz will be back next week, so we should be good, even if Andrew's not coming back.
All right.
Andrew's status is still to be determined, and if he's not back, Liz is in. So you're more than welcome to call in and give your SummerSlam thoughts, though.
All right.
Later, Rick. That's Rick Bailon.
Later.
Tony Acero was here earlier. I'm Harry Brothers. This has been the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next Monday with our thoughts on what happened at SummerSlam, as well as the road to whatever the hell the next pay-per-view is going to be called, because frankly, I don't know. It used to be Unforgiven, but these days, who the hell knows? Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.